The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It's odd. There were more than 3 months out, but it feels like news is breaking fast, moving quickly on the future of fall sports, especially when it comes to college football. Let's, as we have with the NBA, put our finger on the pulse of whether or not we will have a regular schedule of fall football in America. It's Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN News presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. With a rapidly moving story and breaking news left and right, let's get the latest and run it by ESPN's college football reporter Heather Dinich, who is on our phone lines. Good afternoon, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So I have said so far today on the show that I have increasing optimism that we're going to have football in the fall. Now, here's why I believe that to be the case, Heather. I just think sooner or later the tolerance of everyone in this country, including organizations, is going to expire, and they're going to try to go back to some normalcy. And when you combine that with the fact that there's so much money in so many subsidiary organizations, sports, universities that are dependent upon the income flow of a sport like college football, that I think we will have it in the fall. What I'm unconvinced of is we're going to have it, say, in California or maybe even in the Pac-12. Where are you right now on whether or not we will have fall sports, specifically football, in 2020?
Well, I understand what you're saying and where your optimism comes from. I think it's important to remember, and the conference commissioners that I've spoken to reiterated this to Vice President Mike Pence in a conference call a couple weeks ago, just how different college sports is from pro sports. And I think that's why there's some more hesitancy on my end to jump on your bandwagon of optimism. And it's because, unlike Major League Baseball or whatever sport you want to throw out there, these kids can't just pull up into a parking lot, get a 15-minute test, and go into an open stadium. University presidents have to open campuses. And they can't do that until state and local officials and health experts say it's safe to do that. There's a different liability also that has to be considered with these kids who are going back to class and are not paid to make the money for the universities that are in these dire financial situations that you talk about. So I understand what you're saying. I just think it's important to remember just how different the college scene is from the pros, and a lot of that has to go back to when are campuses going to open.
Heather Dinich here on the Will Cain Show. I think you're right, Heather. I wouldn't debate a single point that you just made. By the way, I don't characterize my outlook as optimistic. I actually think I'm being a realist, because what I think is going to happen is, despite those lofty ideals you just talked about and the ones that college presidents are adhering to right now, once the real threat of the financial implications comes home, the realism of that will influence their decisions. It's like the NBA players, in my mind, saying they're not sure they want to take the risk of coming back, but they might have a very different calculation once their paychecks get impacted, which will start at the end of this week. All I'm saying is I think that will change everyone's calculation. I'm not suggesting whether or not it's right or wrong. I'm just saying I think that it will. But let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What happens if a state like California says no students on campus, therefore no NCAA sports? We've already seen that with the Cal State system. I anticipate we'll probably hear something similar from the UC system. But what happens to the Pac-12 in that scenario? Oregon, Washington, Arizona. How would they proceed if part of their conference can't participate?
That's a very realistic scenario that not just the Pac-12, but every conference is considering right now and preparing for. I asked Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, what are you going to do if 9 of your schools can play and one can't? And his response to me was, that's going to have to be a real-time decision. NCAA President Mark Emmert told me that one of the reasons the NCAA can't throw out a blanket start date for everybody like it normally does is because of this state-by-state reopening and different plans across the country. They don't have an answer right this second, which means I don't have an answer for you as to what exactly they will do. But going back to your financial point, I would think that at some point those schools that can play will play. Now, the question is, would the Football Oversight Committee say you have to have at least 50% of your schools open and available to play in order to legitimately compete for a conference title in the CFP? That's probably something that they have to consider before actually going out to play. What are you playing for? Who can play?
I'm just curious, Heather. Where did you pull that number 50% from? Now, just to be clear for anyone listening, that was one of my questions was going to be to you. How do you have a college football playoffs if the Pac-12 doesn't understand how they even factor in at some point? So I wondered if the Power Five would just section off the Pac-12 or any other conference that is fractured up. But you used an interesting number there. You used the number 50%. Like, what if 50% of your schools aren't participating? Does that impact your ability to contribute to a potential playoff implication? Did you just pull that number, or are you hearing something like that?
No, I just pulled that number as an example.
Okay.
Just saying, you know, maybe you have to have at least half your teams able to participate. I haven't heard that specifically. I mean, I could tell you what I did hear specifically from TCU Athletic Director Jeremiah Donati was his perspective on it financially is, you know, if Oklahoma can't play their non-conference games and I can, I'm going to play them because I need that money. So there's also, not just from conference to conference, but from team to team within the same conferences, the issue of what do you do? And look, Kevin Warren, at the Big Ten commissioner, I was on the phone with him last night, and he does not know the answer to that yet. None of these people do. Are they all thinking about it? Yes. They are working, I'm telling you, at least 12 hours a day to find out answers to these questions that they don't have answers to. And we're talking about sports people, so they are relying heavily on medical experts each and every day to help understand where is testing going, how is it evolving, how do you sanitize locker rooms, how do you keep guys 6 feet apart when their locker rooms are literally right next to each other. So those are all kinds of questions and logistics. So you go from the big picture down to the, as soon as they step on campus, what do?
Heather Dinich, ESPN's college football reporter here on The Will Cain Show. I want to come back to that 12-hour day that you just described, but let's lighten it up for just 1 minute because you are well plugged into college football. This is an entirely speculative question. It's not of the moment in the news in any way. But when I was thinking about California, Heather, and the fact that California is making early decisions and Cal State system, and California is a state that has gone very seriously in the stay-at-home orders direction, I was thinking the only other state I can really imagine going this way right now would be New York. But there's no big college football program outside of Syracuse in the state of New York. But what that got me wondering, Heather, is why? Why is there a geographic metropolitan center with 20 million some odd people? Football's a big deal in northern Jersey. Why has college football evolved in Northeast with no big powerhouse around the tri-state New York area? I mean, Rutgers you think would be it, but nobody ever has really stepped up. Why?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. Maybe that's because of the schools that they're competing with around it. When you look at, I mean, I'm thinking about Penn State, Pennsylvania, and then you're talking about the ACC. Syracuse is competing against Clemson, and it goes back to recruiting. I mean, I've seen a baseball game at Syracuse. It's cold up there, man. I mean, like, Dino Babers is a great coach, and he can change things there, and he's starting to do that. You can see that. But at the same time, that's what it all comes back to in my mind, is recruiting. And when I think of recruiting, I think SEC, I think Clemson, and I think the old Big 33, you know, Pennsylvania, Ohio type recruiting ground. And I just think that that's an issue is getting some kids of that caliber up to those schools. Same thing with Boston College.
I think there are some kids in that area. I think it's big high school football in New Jersey, and I think it's cold in Michigan too. So my takeaway is somebody's failing. Somebody's failing.
Somebody's always failing, man.
Heather Dinich here on the Will Cain Show. Now let's return to that 12-hour workday. I believe you that they are. This is what I'm curious about. Right now, so many of us are asking questions every day, just at different levels. The people you're talking to are asking those questions at the highest level. What I found for myself, Heather, is you find yourself spinning in the mud. Because there's new information, contradictory information on a daily basis. No matter how many hours you put in, it feels like yesterday's information becomes worthless compared to today's. What I'm getting at is, why make a decision today? The administrators, the ADs that you're talking to, are they waiting as long as they can? Because I was surprised when the Cal State system made their decision not to put students on campus. I was surprised they did it now. Everyone else you're talking to, what kind of timeline are they trying to work towards?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, and you're right about that. I think a lot of people in college football were surprised by the Oregon governor's statement, I think it was last week or a couple days ago, saying that she doesn't foresee it being safe to have fans in a stadium in September. I mean, you're talking about Oregon playing Ohio State in front of an empty stadium if they play. I think, you know, that kind of shocked a lot of people given the timing that it was of when it was announced. But I asked SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey a couple of weeks ago, are you going to play if nobody else can play? And his answer was, I don't have to make that decision right now. And he's right. He doesn't. But then I talked to some people in the Big 12. All these conferences are wrapping up their conference meetings, their spring meetings that they've been doing virtually. And Bob Bowlesby, their Big 12 commissioner, pointed out, if you're going to start the season on time, realistically, you've got to have football players back on campus around mid-July to give them at least 6 weeks to physically prepare to get in shape. Ideally, most people would like 8, but have kind of agreed, okay, we can do it in 6. If you're going to do that, then probably by mid-June, you need to say, okay, we're going to get things set up so they can be there in mid-July. And if you're going to do that, then you back it up to somebody needs to say something on June 1st, knowing that that's a moving target. So will we see decisions made in early June or at the end of this month? Possibly. But again, all of this goes back to every single person I talked to, every single one at the highest level of college athletics has said those decisions will be made by medical experts and government officials. So they aren't the ones making decisions. They are preparing for when they get the green light to say, okay, you guys can go back.
I think that's plausible deniability. I think that's sign off, but I'm sure that's what they're saying, but I think that is offloading some of the responsibility. Last question for Heather Dinich here on the Will Cain Show. And you started to answer it, but I just kind of want to get your feedback on this as well. We keep talking about California and programs that might be at the most risk, but what about Alabama? What about the SEC? What about, I don't know, the University of Texas, states that are going to be a little more willing to go, at least it looks that way from a government perspective and an attitude perspective, Florida as well. Is your sense that those schools will be playing in the fall more so than some of these others we're talking about?
My sense is that if they can, they will. But again, remember the logistics of it. And they're also considering things like a condensed season where they don't play conference games or pushing it back or a delayed start, or they start on time and there's an outbreak and the season is interrupted. They're also preparing for that. So yes, to answer your question, I think if they can play in those states, they will play. They'll do what they can. Financially, it's important. But I also think there's a very real knowing risk that we're living with this now, all of us.
ESPN college football reporter Heather Dinich here on the Will Cain Show. Really good conversation, enlightening. Thanks, Heather. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Who's your dark horse NFL MVP candidate? Meaning not the most popular pick. You got to go a little off the beaten path. I'll give you mine next on the Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Who's your dark horse MVP candidate? And I know you'll go, of course we know who yours is, Will. And you might be right. But hear me out as to why. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show. It's never going to be easy. Never was, of course. And the incredible challenge of winning a 6th title in 8 years and completing a 2nd three-peat only grows more challenging the closer Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls get to the ultimate goal in the spring of 98. That's the final 2 episodes of The Last Dance this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Catch up on every episode on demand on the ESPN app. Before I get to the Dark Horse MVP candidate, Ed from Wisconsin's been on hold. He's got something to say here. What's up, Ed?
How you guys doing? good.
You know, this is where I'm at with the greatest of all time. And what now, because I think a lot of people get it confused. A lot of sportscasters, I'm going to say, are people of the media. They get confused with success and greatness. Because, like, okay, when it comes to Jordan versus, I think Kareem is the best player I've ever seen. And I'm 52 years old. Now, Jordan was great. But I think Kareem was he just changed the game. When they start putting in rules for you, then you something spectacular. You know what I mean? So that's what I feel like when it comes to that. But one that really disturbs me more than anything is the Tom Brady situation. Because when it comes to Tom Brady, a lot of people say he's the GOAT. How is he the GOAT when I can name three players, three quarterbacks, and I guarantee you probably going to agree with me, there were better quarterbacks. They might not have been as successful, but they was way better quarterbacks. So I don't understand why they don't just say, hey, he's the most successful, but I don't think he's the GOAT when it comes to football. You know, I'm just saying. You know, and I think Don Elway, go ahead.
Here's what I think, Ed. You have a point, okay? I think that at some point you can separate maybe greatness and success. Like, guys do it all the time. I'll tell you who's the master of all this is Max Kellerman. I mean, he's always parsing the words between accomplished and great and talented and great and all this. And I get it. I get all that. What I think is you can say Aaron Rodgers is the most talented, but that doesn't make him the GOAT. And you can say that Tom Brady is not as talented, but that doesn't deny him the status as GOAT. Because at some point, talent and accomplishment have to come together. At some point, they have to come together to create the success you're talking about. That is what it's all about. Otherwise, what are we doing? We might as well just have a scouting combine at the end and say, well, that guy was the greatest. Just based upon what he did on the floor, you know, I've never seen a guy that big, that strong, that fast. That's not what it is. Because there's so much more going on. Intangibles, what's going on between your ears, your heart, all of that stuff. Now, I agree with you. Kareem is incredibly underrated. And that's why I have Kareem second behind Michael Jordan. But I don't think you can divorce success from greatness the way you're trying to do. I think Tom Brady is the GOAT because his success is so overwhelming. Does he have the arm talent that Peyton did or that John Elway did or that Aaron Rodgers did? No. But at some point, who gives a damn? He's got six Super Bowls. And you say, oh, he had this guy around him, that guy around him. You know what? At some point again, the numbers become so overwhelming that all the caveats, they become meaningless. I think that success and greatness become one and the same at some point. Speaking of Max Kellerman, he got into a debate with Stephen A. Smith today about who should be your dark horse MVP candidate in the NFL. Stephen A. made an argument that I think for once in my life I can agree with. It's Dak Prescott. Now, Dak Prescott is third right now in Caesar's odds to win the MVP in 2020. So Marcus Spears and Max said, how could he possibly then be your dark horse candidate? Listen to this.
I think with the multitude of weapons combined with the ego of a Jerry and Stephen Jones who want to show that they made the right decision by drafting a CeeDee Lamb, all of those things are going to put Dak Prescott in a position to be that dark horse that we're alluding to for league MVP honors. I'm rolling with Dak Prescott.
Yes, the operative words, plural, are dark horse, and that does not apply to the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, who has the third best odds of winning the MVP. Yes, the operative words, plural, are dark horse, and that does not apply to the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, who has the third best odds of winning the MVP. Stephen A., you know in the NBA, March, who had the third best odds of winning the championship? The Los Angeles Lakers. Would you call them a dark horse? A dark horse? I don't want to see any of the names on those lists. Not only will I give you another name, I'll give you another position. You ready for this? Here's a dark horse. Saquon Barkley.
Stephen A., I agree with Max. Dark horse mean you can't see him right now. Obviously, they see Dak. They got him third. I agree with him on that point. Max, you got to stop going into all of this damn he the greatest ever and I ain't seen this before and all of that. Not yet, bro. Just relax. Golly, you wanted to throw Brady off a cliff before he was supposed to get thrown off a cliff and not Saquon Barkley the best running back ever. Like, just relax on all of that. I get it. I get the dark horse. I get the dark horse mentality for Saquon Barkley. I'm going to go Matt Ryan.
Oh, dang. He didn't stick the landing. Marcus, he Carey shrugged his ankle on that landing. She stuck it on one leg, so I messed that analogy up. Max does that. What Marcus accused him of is because he's always in love with talent and, promise over accomplishment. He's always in love with that, and defines greatness as such. But Stephen A. is right about Dak, because here's the thing. No matter if he's third in MVP odds right now, I would guarantee you that half the people listening, perhaps more, and 70% of the people are going to respond to me on social media and go, Dak's not an MVP candidate. It doesn't matter if he throws for 5,000 yards, 30, 40 touchdowns, multitude of offensive weapons, number one offense in the league. They're going to go, oh, he's barely above average. And it won't just be listeners and fans. It'll be some people in the commentary as well. They're not hard to find. So if you are that divisive and people want to dismiss you as barely above average, and yet you're also seen as an MVP candidate, I think that qualifies you as a dark horse MVP candidate. And I think he's a perfect pick. Third best odds, you might jump on that for Dak Prescott as MVP. Coming up, I want to do this, the thing. Why are billionaires always bad and millionaires are the ones we root for? You know, why? I got to get into it with some of my colleagues here at ESPN. I got to do that. I got to do that next here on The Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon. Fueling the American spirit.
Why would anyone take the side of billionaires over millionaires? Maybe the question should be, why would billionaires take the advice of millionaires? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Today on ESPN Daily, when NASCAR returns on Sunday, it's a big chance for the sport to regain some of the audience it lost in recent years. Ryan McGee breaks down how to work and how NASCAR can seize the moment. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Yesterday, I told you that Major League Baseball players would need to accept the proposal by Major League Baseball owners for a 50-50 revenue split in 2020 to bring half of a season back, starting July 4th, roughly 82 games, to get Major League Baseball off of the sidelines. There will be some fight, it's anticipated, between the Players Association and owners over whether or not that split can go to 50-50. I held out that Major League Baseball players would have trouble looking the rest of us in society in the eye, as we accept job losses and cuts, but they don't take a temporary reduction in revenue split to get their sport back to work. How would they look the rest of us in the eye? Nuno, in a very confusing moment off air, I may ask to have Bubba translate, said, these cuts speak to me. I don't know what that means, but Dan Lebatard on the Dan Lebatard show, I guess, said some things that are supposed to speak to me. Does that mean he was speaking to me, Nuno?
He was speaking to you and your ilk.
My ilk.
Your ilk, yes.
What is my ilk?
It's always take the owner's side, the forget that you're a laborer, that guy.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, you're that guy.
I don't even know if I need Nuno, Dan Lebatard's cut. I've got Nuno here. Still, let's humor ourselves. What did Lebatard have to say?
You don't have to take a side on this one. You're allowed to say, well, the owners are losing their fans, so they should ask for pay cuts, the way that Governor Cuomo is telling them to take pay cuts. And I understand if you said that. I would get if you would protect the business owner's right to protect the business, even as I don't understand and won't ever understand why so many of you end up calling the players selfish while you yourself are being selfish, wanting baseball back, and while you yourself are labor and you don't side with labor.
That is such a simplification and an ideological reduction of what this is. It's not simply labor versus management, and it certainly isn't millionaires versus billionaires. Mark Teixeira, who made millions in his lifetime, was on Get Up yesterday, and he said that the players most definitely need to take this revenue cut in order to get baseball back moving again. He was roundly mocked on various ESPN radio shows from blue check marks on Twitter, from everybody in the sports media industry. Why? Because they're always trapped in the same mean girls table at the cafeteria, lunchroom counter groupthink that gets them likes and slaps on the back every time they turn around, but totally saves them from ever having a critical thought or challenge cross their desk. They remain safely ensconced in their glass houses because nobody is there to throw a rock at them. Yet I stand here with a stone in my hand because it's ridiculous. It's simplification. It's ideologue. It's not millionaires versus billionaires. It's not labor versus management. It's survival versus death. And I don't think you have to be a millionaire or a billionaire or labor or management to understand that. When you run a business, there's a fairly simple proposition, and everybody from labor to management understands this. If your business runs in the red, it ceases to exist. At that point, your negotiating power is not a 50-50 revenue split, divvying up billions of dollars. At that point, your negotiation is between zero and something. If a business is seeing its top-line gross revenue reduced by north of 40%, and those are the numbers we're hearing from the NBA right now, that without fans in the stands, the game day experience accounts for 40% of total revenues, concessions, ticket sales, merchandising. If a business loses north of 40% of its revenue, it's going to have a hard time hitting the black. And even if we tell ourselves this is temporary, we're going to go back to normal, an increasingly unrealistic economic proposition, how long can you run in the red? I wouldn't suggest very long. There's a reason that people in this company, for example, took a 15% pay cut. There are reasons that people in other companies are taking voluntary pay cuts because they know that the business has to continue. Otherwise, the pay cut is 100%. The Major League Baseball players need to realize that the option is not 55 versus 45, 52 versus 48, the ultimate insult of a 50-50 split. It's what happens if the entire operation ceases to exist. Even temporarily, no games, no season. Who's the one that looks piggish in that scenario? Is it labor or is it management? Is it the millionaires or the billionaires? Is it the ones that will take no concessions at the risk of everything failing? Or is it the ones who are doing what it takes to keep something operating? I don't think I'm the one that's reducing this to ideology. I don't think I'm the one that's reducing this to labor versus management. No, I think it's people like Mike Florio, the perpetually wrong, afflicted with bad judgment, stupendously absurd. If I have a monopoly on the truth, he has a monopoly on ridiculousness. Writer at Pro Football Talk, who tweeted the following. It will be interesting to see who in the media pressures the millionaire baseball players to accept 50% of all revenue in the name of helping Americans, but never pressure the billionaire owners to take less than 50% under the exact same argument. Do the millionaire players accept 50% of the expenses too in this scenario? The billionaire owners, who, by the way, if it needs to be said for the record, are certainly not angels of purity, who certainly are not the easiest champions to root for, but in this scenario represent the party who needs to continue to exist for either party to continue to be employed, have to figure out how to make their businesses operate in the black. And if that asks the millionaires for the time being, the temporary scenario of a nationwide pandemic, quarantine, and shutdown order to take a smaller revenue split, that's what it takes, because this is not about labor versus management. It's certainly not about millionaires versus billionaires. It's about survival versus extinction. It's about staying in the black versus running into the red. It's about negotiating for something or getting nothing. And that, in my mind, is so obvious that the only way you could escape that kind of reality is to live in an absolute glass house surrounded by fellow colleagues who do nothing but tell you you're right on a continuous loop and never dare challenge a single thought that has crossed your mind. But hey, what do I know? I'm easily dismissed. Coming up, somebody who's taken less money actually found some ways to win along the way. Tom Brady sets a model for how much of a salary cap quarterback should take. That's next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
It's fascinating, Tom Brady, quarterback contracts, percentage of salary cap debate, a little bit earlier today. I'm going to have to save that because I'm going to go let people challenge me on some of the things I've said today. So here we go. Let's go from Eric in Tennessee, who I know loves me, but keeps calling. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, good afternoon, Will Kane. Listen, I just want to bring up the fact that a few months ago, Emmitt Smith was telling Dak Prescott to take less money for the benefit of the Cowboys so they can sign more players. And you told Emmitt Smith, hey, you made your money, be quiet about it. Mark Teixeira does the exact same thing. And because it is in line with your narrative, you decide to use that as a point. And
now, hold on, Eric. Hold on. First of all, it's a nice trick to say because of my narrative and dismiss the argument that I made. But it's not a trick that's going to work on me. More importantly is you missed a small detail, Eric, a small detail that differentiates Emmitt Smith giving Dak Prescott contract advice and the idea of whether or not Major League Baseball players should accept less revenue in this moment. It's just a small detail, but you might have noticed it over the past 2 months. There's been a nationwide shutdown and pandemic. This is about this moment. I'm not giving them advice for labor negotiations going forward. I'm not picking billionaires over millionaires in every single negotiation. But what I'm suggesting is in this moment with approaching 30% unemployment and every single business out there struggling to survive, you might make a, you know, take a concession, players.
Yeah, but the billionaires aren't willing to take that same concession. What they're saying is that because we're making less money, you should make less money too. But it's the same, which is anecdotal, right?
Eric, I don't think the billionaires are sitting here going, Eric, I don't think they're saying their profit margin should be 30% instead of 5%. I think when the NBA loses 40% of its gross revenue, they're figuring out how much money can they afford to lose. That's what it is. It's how
deep.
We're
not talking about the NBA. We're talking about baseball.
It's the same thing.
We're talking about baseball.
It's going to be the same kind of numbers.
It's different sports. But maybe it is. But NBA tends to make more money from things like television. Baseball makes most of its money from the stadiums, and that's understandable. But what I'm saying is
that would mean baseball's cuts are even deeper because the 40% is on the NBA losing its game day revenue.
I understand that. But, well, Kane, what I'm saying is that the concessions from the billionaires, from the owners, isn't going to hit them as hard as it would for the players, is what I'm saying.
Why?
Because, exactly. So what I'm saying is that
why would it not hit them as hard?
The owners, because they're billionaires. You can't even compare the two.
See, I'm sorry, Eric. I like that you challenged me, and you've called in several times, and I like it. But you're just reducing this into billionaires have more money than millionaires, so they can afford to take a cut. No. A business at any level has to operate in the black. If it operates in the red, then you're talking about how much longer can it survive. This isn't about pick your Major League Baseball owner. It's not about that billionaire's deep pockets versus Robinson Cano's pockets. It's about whether or not you field a team that can operate profitably. No business goes about its business to lose money. They can't. And even if they do, it's a very temporary situation. It's just like, it's not a situation of like, look, this guy's got deep pockets and this guy's not as deep. It's about this guy's operating an entity that must continue in the black. The other guy has a paycheck and a family and obligations, but it might have to be less for a little while. The other guy's already is less. The billionaire's not making money. Now it's only how much is he losing. It's just a simplification to make it billionaires versus millionaires. How about this? It's a ongoing business versus a paycheck. That's what it's about. Do you have a viable enterprise versus a paycheck? Glickman, you don't have much time, bud. It's perfect for you, though. About a minute and a half, Glickman. What do you got?
Honestly, ongoing business is a paycheck. I like that a lot. I agree with everything that you've been saying. In regards to your last caller, he, I'm assuming, is not a billionaire, and I'm assuming he's not even a millionaire. So,
are you a billionaire?
For him to come out with some sort of, you know, idea that he thinks he knows what's going on, I mean, that's okay. Everyone's entitled to that. However, I think you handled it let me just say this. If I was Will Cain's counsel, I would not say anything more.
I should stop talking, you're saying? Like, I've made my case? Don't hammer it over their head?
Yeah. There's no reason for you to continue this.
Sometimes I hammer a topic over and over.
That's fine, and that's fine. But let me tell you,
Glickman,
you crushed the topic. Okay,
5 seconds.
You crushed the topic, and.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.